The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now, here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good evening, listeners. This is Divya, and it's lovely to be back again here with you. And I want to share with you our today's guest, DJ Sebastian. Welcome, DJ.
Hi, Divya. Great to be on your show.
Fantastic. And folks, what's different today is today we'll be talking about artificial intelligence. And I know, you know, each and every one of us has heard a little bit about artificial intelligence, and there's a lot of fear around it. There's a lot of curiosity. So we will be getting few ideas as to what is the reality and how can it help us in sales and marketing? So, welcome again, DJ, and we are going to jump right into your childhood as to, do you recall any fun moments from your childhood?
Yeah, there were some very important moments. Our family was really into sports and particularly baseball. My brothers and I all played baseball. And one time as a kid, before attending a baseball game, my dad took my brother and I to a little diner near the stadium. After we were served, my dad paid the bill and we walked out. And then during the walk to the stadium, my dad realized that he received too much change back from the waitress. He must have given her a $10 bill, but he received change for a 20 or something like that. So he turned us around. We trudged back to that diner so he could return that extra change. My brother and I were whining and whispering that we were going to miss the opening of the ball game. My dad didn't say anything, but he handed the waitress the correct amount, and she was very appreciative. And then walking to the back to the stadium, my dad used that as a lesson on integrity. And he said, why do we do this? Because you do what you know is right. That extra money wasn't rightfully ours. We couldn't keep it. Plus, the waitress would probably have to make up for it by putting her own money in the cash register. So that moment had a permanent impact on me. So fast forwarding several years later, as a salesperson, my team developed a quote and put the numbers in a spreadsheet, and we sent it off to the customer. And after that, we discovered there was an error in our spreadsheet. We were charging the customer too much. And discovering that error just before they were ready to issue us a purchase order. And it would be easy to just say, oh, well, it wasn't that much, so let's just let it go. But then I remember the lesson that my dad taught us when we walked back to that diner before going to the stadium. So we did the right thing by contacting the customer to notify them of that error. And they were grateful for us being honest, and they became a long-term customer. So it was worth a lot more money and points on our relationship than if we'd have just kept that extra money in the spreadsheet.
What a beautiful story. And I really like, you know, what you mentioned about having that character. And so many, you know, what's sad is that in today's world, so many of us think that some things are just okay. And it's almost like great work justifies foul behavior or position justifies foul behavior. The key is, you know, it's not that somebody's looking at you. It's not about whether somebody's watching you or how people are perceiving you. It's about doing the right thing, regardless of who is watching you. So that's such a great story. And
right. Integrity is really what you do when no one's watching.
Yes. Not only that. And it's about building that character, because when you are acting the right way, regardless of whatever is happening, what it does is it also gives you that innate power, which nothing else can give. And that's something that we talk about, authenticity and having coming from a place of integrity. That is of such a power and true measure of a person. So from there, let's see, you know, which direction your life took and what was your initial area of expertise?
Sure. So playing baseball, attending baseball games, we love the statistics. And on rainy days, my friends and brothers and I played a baseball board game that looked at the probability of you know, what was going to happen next, sort of a money ball before its time. And that got me interested in math and statistics. So in college, I majored in what's now called STEM. So I received a degree in computer science and mathematics. I wasn't the best student. It was tough. But once I succeeded in those difficult courses that had names that I can't even pronounce anymore, but I knew I could accomplish anything if I worked hard enough.
Mm-hmm. And once you went into the computer science, what was your further trajectory?
So initially, my career, I worked as a software developer, designing and building software applications. Later, I became a project manager, managing a team of technical experts, and they were much smarter than I was. And we built complex software that automated factory operations. So to keep the team busy, we needed to find substantial consulting work and win new contracts on a regular basis. So this meant we had to create proposals, negotiate contracts, and deliver solution presentations. It sounded a lot like sales, and it was rather daunting to me at first, but I was determined to overcome my introverted side, and I volunteered to deliver these presentations. Sometimes we were just in front of a few people in a conference room, sometimes we were in front of hundreds in a large auditorium, but there was a big problem. I was terrible at presenting. I hated the thought of speaking in front of a group. I perspired profusely and my heart pounded. I thought it was going to burst out of my chest. So I went to work studying the approach of who were the experts in creating and delivering presentations. I practiced a lot. First, I became adequate, then decent, then very good at presenting in front of a group. And surprisingly, I grew to enjoy that part of my job more than the technical side, more than the design and the software testing and things like that. So my confidence grew so much that I made the decision eventually to make a career change and became a professional salesperson. Mm-hmm. So I reinvented myself through a lot of work and practice.
And that's fantastic. And we have had several questions pour in, so we are going to answer the questions people would like to know. DJ, is that like a radio DJ?
No, Donald James. My father always called me DJ from the time I was a kid. So I just went with that when I ventured in my new career as an author.
Absolutely. And folks, you know, as I'm looking at the questions, you know, what's the moral of the story that we talked about? Going back and delivering that money back to the waitress or the server, or even, you know, returning the money back to your client, is that, you know, acting out of integrity, doing the right thing, whether somebody's watching or not. And the thing is that, you know, we are also like going into what is STEM? STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And listeners, you'll be amazed that, you know, A has been added to STEM, and that has become STEAM, and A is for arts. So the next question that has rolled in is that, you know, you continued your study into computer science, but then you reinvented as a salesperson. So, but if somebody were to ask you about computer science, especially in today's day and age, what would your recommendation be?
Absolutely. If you've got the, you know, wherewithal to study and learn, actually the tools are a lot easier to build software than they were when I was doing it. So it's very easy and quick to put up a website, build an app, even a video game. So I would definitely encourage someone who had that technical orientation to get into something like computer science. And you don't have to be, you know, a geek that sits in a cubicle all day. It took me a lot further than just doing that. And it can open a lot of doors in a lot of careers.
Mm-hmm. So as we were talking about you, you know, let's talk about you went from computer science into sales. What was it about sales that drew you?
Initially, it was when I was developing software, I wanted to be around people. So as we were building the designs for software, I would put on a hard hat, go out of the office and walk into the plant and ask the people in the plant what they were looking for, what they needed. If they could really have certain things that a computer could provide, what would that be? What would that make their job easier? So that just led into, calling on customers. And I didn't feel like I was ever just the, you know, fast Eddie kind of salesperson who just showed up, gave them a quote, and then was never seen before. It was something I could only do it if I could do it with integrity and also provide value to a customer. And I learned that early on that the best salespeople are really valued consultants, and that's really what you need to be successful long-term in this business.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, now you have talked about that you have done a lot of selling roles for big corporations like IBM, SAS, and Quad. So with the entry of artificial intelligence, can you share as to what it is and what it is not?
Yes, certainly. So I detail a lot of this in my book, but I'll summarize it as much as I can. So I've worked closely with customers to help them utilize these advanced technologies like artificial intelligence, like advanced analytics. So I know what's possible now and what customers want in the future. So 20 years ago, robots and automation were introduced into these factories, and we were building software to automate the production lines. And it replaced many skilled workers. So people often liken these robots to artificial intelligence, but it's much more than that. And what artificial intelligence is, it's used loosely in this, you know, buzzword society we have. So anything that is loosely coupled to computers and advanced robotics and automation is dubbed artificial intelligence. But what artificial intelligence is, it's a set of technologies involved in the creation of human-like brain power. So we're not talking about performing tasks that a robot, like flipping a hamburger or doing a weld in a factory. It's brain power that can help reason, plan, it can learn, and then process natural language. So we've got a communication device there that can speak, it can read emails, it can read texts and chat messages and understand what that means. Now, this type of intelligence has been around for a long time, but it was always pre-programmed. So the difference is now we don't have to have that all pre-programmed with every rule, every situation that can happen. we have what's called, part of our artificial intelligence is called cognitive computing. Cognitive is the piece of that brain. And it provides the thinking by using a wealth of data to determine what the answer should be, what's the best possible recommendation at that point in time. And the thing about it is artificial intelligence collects this information, understands what's successful and what's not so good, and then it can adjust the recommendation the next time, so it gets smarter as it learns.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key, that it gets smarter as it learns, and that is one of the characteristics of a being, a human, and that's what has a lot of people scared. So just kind of, you know, we'll come back to this, but there are a couple of questions here. One is, how do you know if your product is going to give value to those who are buying?
How do you know if your solution is going to give, so you need to do some background preparation in advance. So instead of just showing up and throwing something at the wall, hoping it sticks, it's important to look at where the company is, do some research on the potential customer, where they are, and you can find a lot of this information available in their statements that they give to the financial community every quarter, their website, and that'll help you kind of figure out what don't they have and how can we solve that problem. And sometimes it's not able to do that. So what you need to do is you need to have an initial discovery discussion with that customer to explore some potential areas. So if you have a customer who you've done a great job in helping them achieve a new capability, like automate their marketing so that they're getting 10 times the amount of qualified leads that they had previously, and this customer looks like they might have the same issue, so you can kind of relay that computer success story, customer success story, to make sure that that is something that they understand. And then you've moved the conversation to, well, how will that work for me? And then you can get into more of that discussion and use the discovery techniques to be able to ask thought-provoking questions that aren't answered by yes or no, but tell me how you do this, or how are you currently solving this problem today? And that leads into a deeper interaction with the customer. And the best salespeople, like I said, need to operate like they're a valued consultant.
Definitely, you know, what you shared was very valuable, because here's the thing, you know, whenever you want to see if your product is going to provide value or not is also, you know, doing the research, seeing what the data out there. And the key is, you know, be in touch with your market, be in touch with the people that you're going to serve. And when you're in touch with those people, you know, what are their pains, what are their dreams, what are the desires, you're connected with them, and that connectivity allows you to bring solutions that answers their problems. And when that's happening, that's also the time when you can provide value to those who are buying from you. So another question that rolled in was that you had mentioned a book. Can you share the name of your book?
Yes, the name of the book is The Selling Revolution, and the subtitle is Prospering in the New World of Artificial Intelligence. If you type The Selling Revolution in the search box at Amazon, it'll come right up.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about artificial intelligence. Can you also like shed light? What is it that it still cannot do? I mean, from what we have heard, there are several robots that are already out there in Japan, you know, that are serving the customers in hotels. They are at the reception desk. They are even taking on the Google, where, you know, they're being used as a chatbot. They're being used in form of Alexa and so many different places. So can you share what is it that it cannot presently do?
Sure. Right now, artificial intelligence is not going to replace a good communicator that knows the business, that knows the industry, that can articulate a good solution, that could build a strong relationship with a customer. And you'll say, well, that's the job of the salesperson. That's right. It is. So that's why that type of salesperson, that valued consultant, will still be needed. What's going to go away that artificial intelligence is going to replace is the salesperson or the inside sales or the customer service rep who is just doing transactional tasks. So there's a lot of technology out there where people can order things online. They can do their own research if they're looking for a product. A lot of customers just don't like dealing with salespeople. So there's this salesperson avoidance factor that comes into play. So it, you know, as this technology continues to be developed, you'll see a killer app that is going to be a sales advisor machine that'll either help salespeople be more effective, do their job better, or in some cases, it will carry pretty much the entire transaction through a virtual set of communications. So it, you know, if you have enough data in your database or in your applications, it understands more of the customer and it can ask the right questions and it knows, you know, where to go from here in terms of your sales process. So it could eliminate quite a few of the jobs that are in sales in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, when we talk about that jobs will be taken away by AI, and then that brings us to another question. You know, there's already intense competition in humans itself, and now AI steps in and it's going to eliminate the jobs. So what kind of job replacements could we have with the incoming AI, and how can human beings be prepared for this changing winds?
Yes. So what we've coined is a term called the authentic expert, that a sales professional can overcome the threat of artificial intelligence by becoming that authentic expert. And in researching and writing my book, I called on expertise from over 100 other sales professionals who were very successful in their field. They were champions. They shared stories, innovative ideas, and then proven approaches through examples that I witnessed or during their careers in direct conversations. Some of them were my competitors. Some of them were my colleagues. So what it comes down to is we have this this item that we call building the authentic expert brick by brick. So you have three levels. The first level is foundational. These are the personal qualities that make up a strong background that's needed to excel, like integrity or like creativity. Right now, artificial intelligence cannot match the creativity of the human brain. So it's important to cultivate creativity by applying innovative selling techniques that you learn from others or you learn from your own experience. Passion is another one. Having the passion to reach the top in your profession and overcome roadblocks. You know, we say that we have good days and we have character building days. So passion helps you to get through that. Even if you're struggling at one point, just doesn't matter. Just work to get better. So that's that first level, foundational bricks. The second level is structural. These are skills, skills development. So become a subject matter expert in your industry. A lot of people say, well, a salesperson, all they need to do is know their product. It's a lot more than selling product these days, especially when your customer can just go online to your website, download all the white papers and all the product briefs you have, and learn a lot about your product without even asking a question or engaging a salesperson. But that subject matter expert doesn't just know what the product or solution does, but how it helps your customer, how it provides value for this customer, the kind of situations where it works best, the kind of situations where you want to stay away from. Next, you have being a proactive advisor. So being a problem solver. So you want you want to make your customer a hero and make their department and their division and their company heroes by solving problems that they were unable to solve. But you do that by giving value first. That holds the key. You've got to be able to bring proactive, innovative ideas to the table, and that helps you open the door and unlock that value. What you end up with looking for is a reaction that says, wow, I didn't even know that was possible. Too often, the salesperson might just depend on the customer to tell them what they want and what they need and where's their pain. Well, they're not following what's latest and greatest and state-of-the-art in solutions. That's the salesperson's job to make sure that they're aware of that. And then being a clear communicator, excelling in sales demands that you excel in whatever form of communication. You'll appear to be smarter and more likable, and it's easier to build a solid relationship with somebody who's good in communicating, whether it is via text message or email or video or in person face-to-face. And then finally, having a champion mindset. So I liken it to a champion athlete, where your attitude really is what determines your altitude. The winners know that their height of success is unlimited. You've got to be self-motivated. The best salespeople don't need a manager to tell them what they need to do to motivate them, or attend a feel-good speech. They are motivated by what they want to accomplish in their career.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of other questions that our listeners have asked. Is one is a direct question to you. Do you work well with your competitors?
Do I work well with my competitors?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to beat them. You know, when we're on the field, it's like a ball game. Sometimes you're competing with them. It's a chess match, maybe, that they're trying to outflank you. So we want to make sure that we are positioning our solution and our company the best possible way. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. You know, you shake hands, you walk away afterwards. If the customer makes the decision and they give you good reasons why your organization didn't get selected, you know, you have to learn from that, and you have to be stronger the next time. And in this sales world, it seems like you got a lot of the same people just switching. You know, it's like musical chairs. They're working for one company one year and then another company the next year. They're like free agents in sports, where if you do well, you get a chance to, you know, stay on for another year. If you don't, maybe you're looking for another job. So it's always good to keep that network going, even with your competitors, while you're making sure not to disclose or divulge any secrets that's going to hurt you or your company down the road.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have shared several insights about sales. And one of the next questions that has come in is that, doesn't a salesperson need to know how to sell to a person?
Yes, that's part of that communication. Whether when I say customer, it could be a one person that's driving the business, the deal. It could be a group of people. It could be an entire department. And yes, those you're selling. Let's say you go to dinner. You're that's a selling event. Let's say you go out on the golf course and you're, you know, communicating that way. You're learning about their family. There's a lot of interpersonal things that go with being a good salesperson, not just the technical part and not just, you know, spewing what your value and your product does.
Mm-hmm. So we have talked about a lot of different things, and one of the questions that comes to my mind is that how could people leverage AI and advanced analytical tools to increase their skills and career options?
Good question. So while there are some of the transactional sales positions that are going to be either eliminated or reduced in functionality and capability, and maybe not be as high paid as a salesperson's job is, there's still the technology. One of the things we do with our customers that we coach is encourage them to study the trends in their job and your industry, and then evaluate what looks like it might happen with new technology. So continuous learning and reinventing is even more important there. But what you'll need to do is also embrace the advanced technology. So there's going to be some tools that are coming out where the salesperson will have an assistant that will help them either with territory planning or targeting customers in the right way, where they can learn quite a bit from the technology. There's also a piece that's often called part of artificial intelligence called advanced data analytics, or just advanced analytics. So a lot of companies are using these tools right now to do things like forecasting which of their prospective customers should be targets for a marketing campaign, which one will generate the most revenue or the most leads based on what's been done in the past, or in some cases, give me the top five in terms of which companies I should go after on the front end. And then looking at sales managers will often look at predicting which customers are likely to buy based on prior experience. How well is a salesperson doing in managing that whole sales cycle? And even things like bundling products and services they will buy. And it doesn't take a lot to get into doing the first step of that. There are some very economical analytic tools that are available on the market. Some of them are even available open source, where you can get some college students or some young professionals help out with putting together some of these data projects. And then you could take it to the next level. So entrepreneurs are starting to implement, you know, things like we just talked about, how they can better market their solutions, how they can put in a chat capability for customer service so they don't have to have full-time people manning, you know, 24 hours a day, maybe offshore, answering questions that might not always be the right answer. So there's a lot of ways that staying abreast of what that technology is going to help you with your career.
Mm-hmm. And that definitely makes sense. So another question that came is, isn't it harsh to friend a person just to know them better to sell them?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on LinkedIn where somebody asks for a connection, and then 4 hours later, they get the pitch. Hey, I'd like to meet with you to talk about blah, blah, blah. I really think we can help you. That is not the way to do it. The way to do it is to look, if you're going to use LinkedIn or a tool like that, or even Facebook, look at where there are common connections. So I know Dave works in this company now, and you know, Dave probably would know their chief financial officer, and maybe I can get an introduction or a referral through Dave to help out, or just give Dave some information, let him pass it on. That's probably the better way to do that. And, you know, it seems that in this day and age, more people are relying on social media for communication. It's kind of an easier way, but in a lot of cases, it's the lazy way. It's often better to pick up the phone or pick up your smartphone and make a call. And there are a lot of techniques you can use to be able to not be so intrusive, but get your message across, tell a quick customer success story in 30 seconds, and make it value-based. We increased this customer's revenue by 22% in 1 year by doing these three things, and then leave your phone number. I mean, those can still be effective. And the nice thing about it is, you can do that to anybody in the company. You can do that to the CEO. You can do that to a vice president. And if you call them at a strange hour, sometimes they're still working, they might even pick up the phone and you can have an immediate conversation there. You got to be prepared for it because you only get one shot. But those are some good ways to be able to use the tried and true ways to identify opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, you know, you always ask great questions, easier and cheaper with the social media. But, you know, one thing at heart still remains the same, and that is the desire to serve. For me, before anything else, one of the key things is the desire to serve and knowing that you have something that will really help somebody else. And that was, you know, you share the value with the customer and not manipulate them. And I think so the key is that lack of manipulation goes along with it. And sometimes, you know, what happens is that people will even share that we will be marketing to you. And when your customer is aware of it, then what happens is you're coming from a place of integrity and a place of doing the right thing by your customer. So can you share about some traits that Salesforce can use to sharpen their performance?
Sure. I talked about the clear communication. There's actually a paper you can download on my website that says the top 10 tips for crystal clear communication. And it's really, you know, people want to put together a bunch of slides and give a presentation. Well, what if you didn't have PowerPoint to use? How would you get through that meeting or that webcast or whatever communication, even if it's a phone call? So there are a lot of ways that you can engage the customers. Storytelling is one of them, using analogies or examples relating one thing to another. I like to use baseball as an example to use an analogy that, for example, a person that bats 300 gets three hits out of 10 at bats. One that bats 250 gets 2.5 hits out of 10 at bats. Very small difference. And over a 6-month season, the difference is only one more hit a week. Yet the 300 hitter makes $15 million a year, and the 250 hitter makes $2 million a year. So it shows you how small improvements can make a big difference. So that's just one example to use there. So using tools and techniques when you were there in front of a customer, use stories instead of reading text on a slide. The fastest way to have your customer nod off is to just read a bunch of slides. That's not a good way to do things. So there's a lot of examples that you can take advantage of. Another one is this can be hard for even experienced salespeople. It took a while to learn this, but as you work through trying to gain access to your customer's top executives, which is the fastest way to winning business, don't make them feel like you are subservient to them. So you want to strive for what's called equal business stature. Equal business stature. And that doesn't mean you're driving the Porsche that they are, or that you've got, you know, a boat, a yacht that sails the Caribbean. But from a business standpoint, you want to be on the same footing. And how do you do that? You have to gain the expertise, first of all, about your customer's field or their industry. So you've got to understand what their strategy is, their key initiatives, and then bring a couple of innovative ideas to them that you know that your solution can solve. And a quick conversation there can just help you launch into the process of a winning deal, rather than being involved in the, you know, department managers or the analysts or the technical people at the company who don't have any budget and don't have any decision-making authority. So the higher up you can go in the organization, the better off you'll be. And one more thing for you. Every sales manager I ever worked with used the ABC methodology, meaning always be closing, always be closing. That is a myth, and it's been a mantra for so long, but closing is a mindset that implies that it's a transactional event. You're not cultivating a relationship, and if you have that mindset, the only positive outcome is when you close a deal, then you move on to your next victim. But that's not how to think. You want to think win-win instead. So instead of closing doors, a win, no matter how small, can open many new doors for you and your customer. So that win-win situation opens the path to success as you jointly celebrate with your customer a bond you help create. It opens your relationship to greater collaboration. Maybe you can help other departments with your product or solution. And it creates the potential, it opens the potential for your customer sponsor to become an advocate for you, to tell other people what great success they had with your solution.
Mm-hmm. So other question that has come in is, how do you gain access to the key stakeholders?
Okay. There's two ways to do it. First is to try to go bottom up. So find somebody in the organization that is at a certain level, but maybe not the top level that you need for access. But meet with them, win them over, show them how you can make them a hero, and then have them take you in to the key stakeholders. So that's one way, and that can work. Sometimes it takes longer because you're implementing additional steps in the process, but it might be required because a lot of these executives are unreachable, or they have, you know, gatekeepers that are just really tough to get to. The other way is start at the top. Start at the top, like I talked about, creating equal business stature. Learn who let's say you're talking to a CEO or a bigger company, maybe a vice president, and learn who their executive assistant is, not their gatekeeper, not their secretary, their executive assistant. They are often very good business people. Maybe they were in a business role before and now they're just serving the executive wing. So I had some situations where using that technique worked very well, where either sending a call or a letter, sending a letter with nothing that talked about our product, but talked about the results, the 22% or the 10% extra this or that we could provide to them. And we'll, you know, if they want to find out more, you know, talk to us and we can show you how. With about three bullet points on, you know, if these are things that you're looking to solve, you know, perhaps, you know, I give you these ideas for consideration. You're not saying we can solve your problem. We can save you money. You're saying, here's some ideas. We've helped other people, and I'd like to have a conversation with you. And sending those to, you know, I was working with an $18 billion company, sent to the CEO and the two executive vice presidents, who all were supported by the same executive assistant, Nancy. Nancy got my letter, FedEx, very important thing. And Nancy called me up and said, Mr. Sebastian, I know you wanted to talk to Richard. He's out in Europe this week, but can we set something up for next week? I said, well, I can be there next Tuesday or Wednesday. Does that make sense? So we set up that meeting, and that really was the start of a nice long process where we ended up with a really good win. Now, it still took a lot of time. Richard then said, hey, work with this guy, work with this lady, and then report back to me in 3 weeks as to whether they're communicating or they're, you know, whether they're cooperating with you. But it's an easy way to cut through all the politics and the things that happen in an organization where, you know, this person doesn't even want to talk about anybody from outside helping them because it'll take their job away or they won't feel as important. So there's two ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great information. And we have had so many questions pouring in that I don't know where the time flew away. I'm just glad that we were able to answer questions from our listeners. If somebody were to reach out to you, how can they connect with you?
So my website is thetechseller.com, T-H-E-T-E-C-H, seller.com. You can email me at dj@thetechseller.com. And again, for my book, you can go to Amazon and type in The Selling Revolution in the search box, and you'll find it there.
Mm-hmm. So we have very few quick moments where we can ask some rapid-fire questions, which is just like, you know, keep it very quick and maybe like, you know, one sentence or the top two sentences. What would you say is the one thing you own you wish you did not?
A house where the grass needs cut.
Yeah, that can be tough, especially in the springtime and if it's raining. So what is the thing you're most afraid of?
Driving over bridges. I know, it's strange, huh?
Well, you're just being honest, so thank you for sharing that. What compliment do people give you the most?
Your voice makes you sound so much younger.
Well, that's great. And if you could change one thing about your surroundings, what would it be?
It wouldn't have a winter. It would be beach with a nice breeze and ocean water lapping up, you know, near my property.
Mm. Well, fantastic. And if you were to leave one tip for our listeners that they could implement in their lives tomorrow, what would that be?
I would say study the trends in your job, in your company, in your industry to evaluate what's going to happen with AI, and then commit to continuous learning and reinvent yourself on a regular basis to remain relevant in your career.
Definitely makes sense. Thank you, DJ, for sharing, you know, valuable tips and great knowledge. And of course, you know, listeners, thank you for asking great questions. And thank you, Rebel, for making the show possible. And of course, you can reach out to us at contact@divyaparekh.com. And let us know what kind of stories we can bring for you and how can we make your life simpler and successful. So thank you again, DJ, and listeners, we'll see you again next time. Until then, take care. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.